Welcome to the Hairdryer Treatment Podcast, powered by Kevin Grogan Soccer, Soccer Coffee, and much more. Welcome to the show this week. We're delighted to have an interview with Tom Markham, who is the producer of a great documentary called Kaiser, the Greatest Footballer Never to Play Football. It's a really interesting documentary, a great interview with Tom, who also talks about his resume and his career and all the interesting projects he's doing, and also gives an opinion on a few different topics in soccer. Definitely worth having a listen. So after the break, we have an interview with Tom Markham, the producer of Kaiser, the Greatest Footballer Never to Play Football. The Hairdryer Treatment Podcast is proudly sponsored by Rezl. Rezl is the market-leading, academically validated VR training and cognitive development tool for elite football and is already installed at world-leading clubs. Rezl.com. Tom, welcome to the show. How are you?
Very good, Kev. Yourself?
I'm very good. I really appreciate you coming on. So let's start by talking a bit about your very impressive resume. You have an MBA in football industries, correct?
That's correct, yeah. So I used to work in finance. I worked as a foreign exchange trader for 4 years, and I just got bored of that type of environment and decided to go back to university and did an MBA in football industries at the University of Liverpool, which was an amazing experience. I think 14 different nationalities on the course. So you got a perspective as to how things happened within the football sphere across the globe. And after that, I ended up getting a lecturing position in Henley Business School, teaching the practical elements of trading with my FX experience. But I did a PhD that specialized in of football clubs.
Wow. And then you had a stint with PwC as head of football client. What did that entail?
Yeah, so I went to PwC, and the main reason that I went to PwC at the time, Kev, was they had the contract from UEFA to do the financial fair play reporting. And that meant you got to see inside the biggest football clubs in Europe. So we did Barcelona, AC Milan, Galatasaray. So I found that very, very interesting, and it was good to get an insider's perspective. And yeah, so PwC was a very, very good experience.
Yeah. Now you were going into these big clubs in Europe and looking at the finances, and you know, a lot of people talk about corruption in football. Did you notice that, or do you think that, you know, people were doing the right things?
Well, I think UEFA are obviously really trying to make clubs sustainable. I think there still is definitely elements of corruption. You know, there's been various match fixing scandals, etc. I think that there's one or two more that will come out around Europe this summer. But all in all, I think at the highest point in the game, that the corruption has definitely gone down.
Yeah, yeah, it's very interesting. Kind of then talking about corruption and moving on to kind of the main reason we're talking here, you're involved in a very, very interesting documentary called Kaiser, the Greatest Footballer Never to Play Football. Tell us a bit about what the storyline is and how you personally got involved in that.
Sure, yeah. So my background, as we've just discussed, has nothing to do with film. And a very good friend of mine, Rob Fulham, a fellow Dubliner, he came to me with this story, and this was in 2013, and it was four paragraphs that have been translated from Portuguese into English. And the crux of it was a story about a con man, a guy who actually managed to fake a 26-year professional football career. And we didn't believe it at the start. He came to me and said, "Do you know anything about this guy? Do you know the story?" So the guy's name is Carlos Kaiser. And like all Brazilians, he usually just has one name, so he's known to all as Kaiser. So we laughed about it for a while, and then we parked it. And in 2014, the two of us went over to the World Cup with another friend who was working for Manchester City at the time, Claudio. And Claudio brought us out, you know, for two good nights out in Rio. And this story came up twice independently, both nights over a few beers. And we just couldn't believe that it was actually true. So we asked all the questions around it. But as it turned out, he managed to sign for the biggest clubs in South America. He was at Flamengo, Botafogo, Vasco da Gama, Independiente in Argentina, Puebla in Mexico, Ajaccio in France. So, but the guy couldn't actually play. So it's, you know, to, from a Kanban perspective, you look at something like Catch Me If You Can, any of us can put on a pilot's outfit or, you know, fake a few checks, but not many people can, and you can testify to this, having played at the level that you have and trained with the people that you have, to sustain a professional career for that amount of time when you can't actually play in probably the most difficult place to make it at the time. This was 70s, 80s, 90s. So Brazil, all the best players were still playing domestically. So it was such a difficult place to break through, let alone break through at one of the biggest clubs over there.
Now, there was obviously at that time, there was no real 70s, 80s internet or social media. So that obviously helped him, I presume, in terms of kind of conning people.
Absolutely. So I don't want to give too much of the film away, yeah. But you know, the fact that you can't openly look someone up and find out their background as you can do today obviously helped him a lot. But it, in an ironic way, it was actually social networks that helped him, because he befriended all of these players. So from the 70 team, the famous 70 team that won the World Cup for Brazil, right through to the 1994 team that won the World Cup in America, he actually befriended all these players, and a lot of them helped him on his journey because they really, really liked this guy. He was a super charismatic person, a person that people wanted to spend time with. And that was part of the reason why he managed to sustain this for such a long period.
Now, just to talk about some of the kind of cast, I mean, you have people like Zico in there and Carlos Alberto, some of like the greatest names in soccer. Like, and when you first watch the documentary, it kind of strikes you that these are serious, serious people talking about him. So is that kind of the people he was hanging out with and kind of befriended?
Exactly, yeah. So as you mentioned, Carlos Alberto, it's actually the last interview with Carlos Alberto before he passed away, because he passed away quite suddenly. And he was really, really good friends with Kaiser. Kaiser was actually one of probably only 50 people that went to the friends and family funeral for Carlos Alberto. So that's how close he was to the individual. But as you said, you know, we interviewed, I think we did 73 interviews whilst making this. So the story is so in depth. There's mafia connotations. But one of the things, as you said, that really resonates is the fact that, you know, they are really big hitters that he was dealing with. So we interviewed Zico, we interviewed Bebeto, we interviewed 12 World Cup winners altogether. So, wow. You know, serious, serious footballers. And they all absolutely loved this guy.
It's unbelievable. Now, from your own point of view, you were the producer, correct? And it was your first time producing something?
Yeah, correct. So what actually happened was, so Rob, the guy that I mentioned earlier on, we came back from Brazil, so 2014, and we just couldn't believe the magnitude of this story and just how unbelievable it was. So we made a conscious decision. We said, well, someone should make a film about this, because you look at all, there aren't that many new ideas. It's rehashes of different films all the time. And we just felt that this was stranger than fiction. So I think, again, like a lot of the best ideas, this was discussed in the pub as well. And we ultimately, after a few, probably too many pints, decided that we'd undertake this. And so we put together the team. The guy who directed it is an up-and-coming young director called Louis Miles, who's ex-BBC. And Louis did a sensational job. And we had two DOPs, Steve and Will, who you know, were incredible, top of their field. So they're doing really, really high-end advertising now, and probably a little bit outside of our budget, but we managed to get them at the time. And so it was a very small team. So we put together the money ourselves to go over and ultimately find Kaiser. And the other thing is, you're dealing with a con man here, Kev. So we had to structure the deal in such a way that he wouldn't go off and sell it to 12 other different people and gain his trust and ultimately prove to him that we were the best people to tell this story, which we managed to do that.
Yeah, it's just so fascinating. I've been talking to a lot of people in America about it, and it actually is unbelievable, and they have so many questions about it. And I suppose the answer to the questions is to go and watch it yourself, because it is so fascinating, correct?
Yeah, and it's one of those things that you watch, and there are more questions than answers. And we tried to actually make it in such a manner as how we found the story. So, you know, there's no angles taken on this. It's warts and all. What you see is what you get. But as I said, we did 73 interviews. I think we had 210 hours worth of interviews. So we could have done an O.J. Simpson style doc here that went on for, you know, 12, 14 hours. But the story didn't necessarily lend itself to that. So what we actually decided to do was we hired a writer. So we hired a guy called Rob Smythe, who writes for 8x8 in the U.S. He writes for The Guardian. And he ultimately took up the mantle to tell the story. So it's the reverse to most situations like this, that you're actually better off watching the film first and then reading the book if you've got more questions. And we're also looking into potential dramatization of the story as well. We've had a number of approaches on that front, so that's something that we're considering.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, because it does lend itself to a fantastic movie as well, and is that something you definitely want to do when you're kind of pursuing?
Yeah, so we're exploring all options. But I think it would almost lend itself better to a series, because the story is so in depth that you'd actually have to do you might have to do three or four movies to tell the full story. So, and obviously we're in a you know, a very, very content driven market now with all the OTT platforms, etc. I think they prefer a series format, but this definitely does lend itself to it.
Yeah, that would be brilliant. I can see a Netflix series coming. It would be absolutely brilliant. And then in terms of your own kind of aspirations, are you looking to do other things in this field as well after this kind of success?
Yeah, so we're actually, we're almost finished our second film, which we're hoping will be ready in the next 2 to 3 months. And that is about the oldest team sport that's still played in the world. It's a sport called Calcio Storico that's played in Florence. And it's been played since the 15th century. And I think three popes played this game. Michelangelo played this game. So extremely historic. But it's quite barbaric. It's a combination between probably gridiron, so football as they'd call it in the States, a little bit of rugby, MMA. It's 27 aside, and it's hardcore. So, yeah, definitely probably one of the best live sporting experiences I've ever had. So if any of your listeners that find themselves in Florence in June, it's worth exploring.
Wow, that's really, really, really interesting. So, yeah, it sounds like a great avenue for you, and you're kind of picking up really interesting stories. So just with the Kaiser, the greatest football and never to play football, that's the best place to get it in America is Amazon, correct?
Yeah, so it's just come out on Amazon Prime. So obviously, any subscriber can watch it for free. So, you know, that's over 100 million people in the US. So we're hoping it'll go well with the interest. But after that, yeah, it could, as you said, it could end up on any of the OTT platforms in terms of the dramatized element.
Yeah, brilliant. Now, just to kind of go off topic a tiny bit, I have to ask you, because I know you'd have your ear to the ground with kind of all the stuff going on with the FAI, and we have a lot of listeners both in Ireland, England, and over here in the USA, and they are intrigued with what's kind of happening with the kind of John Delaney, the chief executive of the FAI. Where I'm sure you're following it. Where do you stand with all of that?
Yeah, I think, you know, the way everything has played out, I think I'm the same as most people, that I think it's time for change. You know, I'm completely behind Niall Quinn and the fact that he obviously wants to redevelop the league and make the league more competitive and sustainable. So I think, you know, we'll see what happens from John Delaney's, you know, review, and the fact that he's on gardening leave. But the fact that the whole board have left, I think, is a positive. There's so many strong people that work around the football industry that are Irish all over the world. So I think we've an opportunity to put together a world-class team and ultimately get Ireland back qualifying for World Cups. And I know we've qualified for the last two Euros, which is fantastic, but just develop a competitive structure to be able to compete at the level that we did probably in the 90s, well, 80s, 90s, and early 2000s.
Yeah, I 100% agree. It's kind of a shame someone like Brian Kerr, who I obviously played under, has kind of not been involved for over 15 years. Is that something that the FAI should look at bringing back in?
Oh, definitely. Well, Kev, you know Brian better than anyone, but Brian's track record for developing young players in the country is second to none. So the fact that he has been frozen out just down to personal relationships and people not getting on is disgraceful. I think that an individual like that needs to be involved. And it's good that he obviously has his outlet in the media to be able to speak about everything that's happening. But yeah, I'd say whoever gets involved there would love to see Brian back in some sort of development role.
Yeah, 100% agree. And then just moving on to the Premiership briefly, I mean, it's really interesting at the moment. Do you think it's going to be Liverpool or Manchester City?
Personally, I think City are going to pip them. I think it'd be nice to see, having lived in Liverpool and the fact that they've been starved of titles for so long. I think that City's experience and the fact that they've gone through what they've gone through in the Champions League, I can't see them let's just say falling down at the last hurdle. Even though they've got the more difficult fixtures, I think just the experience will get them through. But I think Liverpool have done an amazing job this year, and no one would begrudge them winning the title. But for me, if someone put a gun to my head, I'd still say City with the experience.
Yeah, I'd probably agree. And then just on the kind of financial side of football, I mean, Manchester City is a great example how much money they spend on players. Is that type of money that's getting spent, stopping some of the young players, homegrown Irish and English players, because they're going out and buying teams rather than producing players themselves? Is that an issue?
I think that's a very, very fair evaluation, Kev. And that was one thing, having worked on this internally at UEFA, one of the things that UEFA did was with financial fair play, they actually said to clubs, you could spend as much as you want on the development of players and on facilities around the development of players. So their heart was in the right place. But what's actually ended up happening is that a lot of the bigger clubs have hoarded talent just so no one else will get their hands on them. And they've paid them a lot of money. And they've obviously, you look at Manchester City, as you mentioned, who are under investigation from FIFA and the FA for paying transfer fees for underage players. I think it hasn't necessarily worked out the way everyone would want it to. So I agree with you. I think that it becomes very difficult for Irish players in particular to even make it over to the big academies at this stage, because they're picking players from all over the world and sort of flouting the rules a little bit. You look at some of the other big clubs, you look at the amount of players that Chelsea have out on loan, you look at the amount of players that Juventus have out on loan. It's probably not right, and they are playing the system a little bit.
Yeah, because you look at the Irish team back 88, 90, 94, most of our players are playing at the highest level in England. And now that's not really happening. And is that a reason why we need to strengthen the League of Ireland so we have a proper home for these players so they can develop in our country physically and mentally, and then maybe sell them on to the highest level when they're a bit older?
I think that's a great way to structure the league, because it needs sustainability. The real problem for the League of Ireland is that it's very much hand to mouth, that clubs don't have the budget to be able to plan for the future. They're giving players, contracts that don't last the full year, so people are out of contract and they can't cash in on them. So as you said, to develop a league that develops players is probably the best way to structure everything. And you want to give players a very, very good option to stay at home rather than take the risk. And I know a lot of people have spoken about education as well, and the fact that if you're able to tie in a very, very good education process where and a world-class training environment, it is a viable option for players to stay at home.
Yeah, I totally agree. So, Tom, we're just running out of time here, but it's been brilliant having you on. I mean, some of the things you're involved in now are so exciting, and it's no surprise you're doing so well. So it's Kaiser, the greatest footballer never to play football, and we recommend going on to Amazon to get it. And, Tom, we look forward to your next project coming down the road. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kev.
The Hairdryer Treatment Podcast is proudly sponsored by Rezl. Rezl is the market-leading, academically validated VR training and cognitive development tool for elite football and is already installed at world-leading clubs. Rezl.com.